from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Royteam.
It's Thanksgiving Eve, and this is a time that I believe that all of us should talk about what we are thankful for in 2020. Yeah, there's some negativity that's happening this year, but there's also some things that we can be thankful for. So you can text us, 98973, or you can post your thoughts on our G and Ursula Facebook page. Post there. Make sure that you like us while you're at it, and we're going to be sharing those thoughts at 11:30 today. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G.
Chef, good morning to you, sir.
Happy Wednesday, Friday.
Ursula, I was thinking about this morning, and yes, we did have fun during our pre-show meeting, but I was thinking about this show and how I believe all of us need it to be, not necessarily want it to be, but need it to be, and we really do need to talk about throughout the show things that we're thankful for as we continue to do today.
Absolutely. If you haven't gone onto our Facebook page ever, do it today, because I took a picture of these guys while we were having our show meeting. And I think in the new year, we've decided that we are going to share some of the antics that occur that early in the morning, because you guys are nuts. But anyway, go to our Facebook page, check it out, and we want you to share your thoughts about what you're thankful for. And again, we will talk about that at 11:30.
Let's get to it. Ursula's top five news stories of the day.
Our state has seen more than 6,000 new coronavirus cases just in the past 3 days, and hospitalizations now are nearing an all-time high.
Ventilators should not be in shortage, even if we do have a surge, but we need nurses and physicians to staff that ventilators, and that's where the real challenge is.
That was the governor yesterday. Dr. Nathan Schlicker is with the Washington State Medical Association, and he says some hospitals are already having to postpone non-urgent but often necessary care.
This isn't a hoax. This isn't something that's no big deal, because it's not just the 1% or 2% that die from this disease. It's the 10% that have lifetime implications, and all those that don't get the care they need.
Today at 10 o'clock, we will be joined by the director of infectious diseases at Harborview. That happens at 10 o'clock. Ursula, when you start seeing, you can kind of see what's happening on a national level. Every state are starting to talk about, at least the healthcare workers are talking about the strain and the stress that are happening in hospitals. There is the filling up of beds that's starting to happen. But the most important thing that stands out to me, Ursula, is this. It is the mental health of these healthcare professionals. And I say that because I know they're human, just like me and you. They're human. And if it's November and some of you guys are saying, hey, I'm kind of fed up. And, you know, these healthcare professionals, they've had to be consistent the entire time. They've had to probably stay away from loved ones because they are caring for your sick mother or father or grandmother or grandfather. They've had to consistently do the right things over the last 9 months so that they can properly do their job and not put anyone in harm's way. And even still, with that, our country has lost 1,000 healthcare professionals, and for that is really sad. And I'm gonna end it with this by saying a big thank you to those that are on the front lines in the hospitals, nurses, doctors, those that clean the facility, everybody that's involved.
You're 100% correct. And one of the things that I've heard over and over again is when doctors or nurses or hospital staff, what they're dealing with, which is almost like a battle zone in the hospital, and what they're dealing with and having to see people that they know will not survive, and how heartbreaking that is. And then they say they walk out of the hospital and they go to a grocery store, and then they see where people are arguing over whether it's a mask wearing or, you know, their rights being taken away. And they think it's like, wait a minute. We're seeing two totally different worlds. And the reality is there is a shortage of nurses in this country. There's also so many people, like you said, who are burning out or deciding, you know what, I can't do this anymore, and I'm going to, you know, retire early. If the staff can't keep up, hospitals have to reach out to recently retired doctors. And then if that's not enough to cover the need, the state would actually have to ask for help from the military. As of right now, it's not the hospital beds necessarily, although they are filling up. But also, this idea of, for every patient, you need like four or five additional people. Yeah. Right? I mean, whether it's, you know, the people who are dealing with your respiratory issues or your nurses or whatever. So whatever we can do, we need to do. The rumblings about it are getting louder, but state health officials are now thinking about loosening the guidelines that are used to reopen schools. And we mentioned it earlier this month, G, after these proposed changes were outlined by the Department of Health. So right now, school districts are advised to stay remote if the COVID infection rate is above 75 cases for 100,000 residents over a two-week period. Okay, so 75. That would change to 200 cases if the guidelines were adopted. And that would mean about half of all the state's 300 school districts could reopen. So many schools could reopen if these guidelines were adopted, at least from K through 8th grade. And this is happening because the CDC and some other public health experts have recently come out and said that the data that is available shows that schools are not super spreaders of the virus.
I'll take that. I'll take that information and I'll hang on that. Because the reason why I'm saying that because that these kids that are in these, like I can only speak for my kid here, right? Like I see my kid here every single day. Is he fine? Well, he's fine. He's cool, at least I think. But he's not hungry. There's nothing bad happening. The environment here is fine. So I think he's going to be okay. But I'm not going to say that he's great, because he's probably missing some of his friends and interaction and having a place to go to. I'm just thinking about the many kids out there that don't have maybe a good situation at home. And even the kids out there, Ursula, that have great situations at home, but are still struggling right now. So if there is any good news and information on, hey, maybe there's just this little bit of hope to get kids back in school, hey, I'm all for it, Ursula. I'm all for it. Please.
Well, I think it's going to have to be, the messaging is going to have to be constant. And there's going to have to be more data, because right now this database that they're using was created by a Brown University economist and some of her colleagues. And it was done by crowdsourcing. So when we talked to Dr. Rasmussen about it, she said, okay, it's limited data. But as you've mentioned, and as we've heard, kids are really having the toughest time. And parents, and their parents too. Even if these changes were adopted, I want you to think about this. Because the cases are so high right now, schools in King, Pierce, and Snohomish still could not do in-person learning because the case counts are too high. So even if they were to loosen them, which is again why we need to work even harder to knock out the virus before we have that vaccine. In Renton right now, teachers have filed an unfair labor practice complaint. So the Renton School District wants to send kids back to the classrooms in 5 days.
Hey, now, look, I am not questioning it. Again, you can hear it in my voice that I am just excited about the possibility, remote possibility of kids going back. Here's my question, though, Ursula. How do you think that they are able to do these studies and figure whether or not these schools, whether they are or they're not? And I'm not questioning, but the kids aren't really in school to figure that out. Like, how can we know that?
That's why we're saying it's limited data.
Yeah, I know.
But what they're looking at is other places. So other states have opened up.
Right.
I mean, Michigan being one of them. They have a Democratic governor, but she has at least said, we're going to, because there's some places where bars are open, but schools are not. So the question, even for Joe Biden last night during that interview that he did with NBC News, he was asked, like, do we have this backwards? Like, why are bars reopening and schools are not?
No,
so the question is, how do you make it as safe as possible and make it a much higher priority so we get the kids back to school? And I think the biggest thing is, it's not about kids getting sick, because even in this state, no child in this state has died. But there are statistics that show that kids do get sick, and in some cases they can have long-lasting effects. But again, much smaller numbers, much, much smaller numbers. The bigger sell is going to be for the teachers. And I'm not just talking about teachers' union. This is also something that is being seen in private schools as well. How do you convince the teachers that even with all the cases going up, it is still safe? I think that's going to be the hardest hurdle to clear. Okay, so speaking of that interview, as he introduced key members of his cabinet, President-elect Joe Biden claim that America is back.
In calls from world leaders that I've had, about 18 of them or 20 so far, I'm not sure the exact number, in the weeks since we won the election, I've been struck by how much they're looking forward to the United States reasserting its historic role as a global leader.
And some of his picks include Antony Blinken, who will be Secretary of State if confirmed, Alejandro Mayorkas as Secretary of Homeland Security, and Avril Haines as Director of National Intelligence.
They embody my core beliefs that America is strongest when it works with its allies. And while this team has unmatched experience and accomplishments, they also reflect the idea that we cannot meet these challenges with old thinking and unchanged habits.
So I told you that I felt such relief listening to this yesterday, and you were not as impressed.
Because I was, everything that followed it and was talking, I was fine with. The America is back, that just rubbed me the wrong way, is all. I think I have figured some things out. My track record in me talking about Joe Biden, it's always consistent. I think Joe's a good person. I think Joe says things that he's kind of disconnected sometimes. It's no different than having your great uncle or your grandfather or grandmother that's kind of set in their ways, and they say things and you're like, I cannot believe you just said that. And I think that's what we're going to be dealing with that's what I'm going to be dealing with Biden, right? This is like, I can't believe you said that. Like, for an example, when he talked about corn pop, you know that's a damn lie, Biden. That wasn't the true story. But anyways.
But right now, he's not talking about corn pop. What he was talking about, I feel, was exactly the tone that we need to have moving forward. And I am going to hold him accountable, and I think we all should. He did mention that his administration is about unifying the country. So he was asked, are you going to have Republicans on your cabinet? And he said, absolutely.
It's beautiful.
To the point where Senator Ben Sasse was actually saying, it looks like he is not going for the ultra progressives, and he is trying to center the country, which, like it or not, the voters have said that they don't want to be extreme on the left and extreme on the right. Mm-hmm. I mean, 80 million people plus voted for Joe Biden, 72 million people voted for Trump. And I think there, and then look how evenly divided the House and Senate are now. I mean, right. I think that says something. I'm willing to give Joe Biden a chance, and I'm kind of going with whatever he's saying. I'm thinking I'm going to go in the spirit of it. I actually like his picks.
Okay. But I didn't say anything about the picks. I thought everything else he said was cool. I just want to say one line. America is back.
Yeah.
That part rubbed me what do you mean is back? Yo, we are going through some things right now. Take everything you did, take that little line out, and we can continue forward.
So how far should government go to make sure that you don't have too many people at your Thanksgiving dinner? The New York State Sheriff's Association is blasting Governor Andrew Cuomo over his executive order limiting private gatherings to 10 people. The association says police will not be enforcing this rule as long as the violations aren't egregious. And one sheriff was quoted as saying, there's no need for people to hide cars and sneak around to gather with their families in their homes. And then Cuomo fired back with this.
I believe that law enforcement officer violates his or her constitutional duty. I don't consider them a law enforcement officer because you don't have the right to pick laws that you think you will enforce and you don't enforce laws that you don't agree with, right? That's not a law enforcement officer. That's a dictator.
Well, Cuomo, by the way, man, you kind of get a little too big for your britches, man. I don't know what's going on with you lately. But let me just say this, Ursula. When you start talking about laws, right? Like, if you go through some of the laws that are still on the books in some of these states, they'd be something, right? Like, all laws aren't federal. There are state laws that are still on the books that if they were enforced, you would not believe. So I wanted to talk about that point of it. The second part of it is, hey, Ursula, I got a problem. Like, we are going through a pandemic. You're not going to be policing somebody's house. You're not going to tell people that, hey, we got a complaint. We heard that you have 7 people, or we heard that you have 10.5 people in your house. Is there
10
a problem?
10.5?
Well, you know.
Who's the half?
A baby. You know what I mean? It's a baby. 10.5.
Okay, wait. You just threw me off on that one. Wait. Okay. First of all, do you remember what we were praising Governor Cuomo?
Oh, sure.
I was like, this is a great example of leadership. I think this pandemic has gotten to his head.
Yeah, it did.
I think at this point, why is he now trying to pit police officers against people? You just, all you need to do is say, please, please, for the life, please try to do the right thing when we gather for Thanksgiving.
You know,
we're already showing you, you know, hospitals are filling up, you know, all these things. But to threaten, like, hey, I need you to go enforce it and sick the police on families that are having these big gatherings.
Yeah. Yeah. do you want to do stop and frisk all over again, too, Cuomo? I mean, come on, man. And by the way, you know what Harvey Dent in Batman said, right? He said, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And in this case,
oh, no.
I need Cuomo to just chill, man.
I think he needs to take some time off and then just, like, regroup.
Yeah.
Regroup. Okay, finally. You know how our state's Employment Security Department got scammed out of hundreds of millions of dollars by that Nigerian crime ring?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we apparently don't have the worst case of COVID fraud. California takes the cake. So we're just finding out that tens of thousands of prison inmates, including convicted serial killers, have carried out what prosecutors there say is possibly the largest fraud scheme in California history.
Mm-hmm.
Between March and August, the inmates, including notorious wife killer Scott Peterson, were busy filing 35,000 claims totaling $140 million in benefits, and prosecutors say these alleged crimes could total up to $1 billion.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that's Scott Peterson, the one that they were looking for his wife, and he was the one
Lacey.
Took her out on the boat, and Lacey? Yeah. Scott was scamming the people from the jail cell?
Yeah.
You know what? Does that make me feel better here in the state of Washington? Sometimes if you get scammed out of $10 and somebody else down the street gets scammed out of $20, does it make you feel better? Kinda. So you can at least say, well, at least they didn't get me for 20. They only got me for 10. So we got to try to find a win in something, Ursula.
Okay, but I'm looking at this. So we've got some people, there are even people on death row. First of all, how did they have the time? Secondly, with all that brain power and all that extra time,
how'd they have the time? Was
anyone paying attention to them?
They write beautiful letters too. Remember, they have lots of time on their hands.
Yo, have you ever gotten
you
a letter
do?
From
you're
somebody?
You're already on death row. What are you going to do? Slap some extra time on you? I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, I do. We do have people that do listen to. Maybe folks listen to our show. They do listen to our show from inside. So happy Thanksgiving to me as well.
Okay, maybe they can tell us. Like, how could you pull this off? How?
Man,
35,000 claims. There are people to this day here in the state of Washington who still haven't seen a penny.
Okay. Yes, you're 100% right with that. Hey, coming up next, you know, snitching. Do you want to keep an eye on how fast or how far your teen is driving? We're going to be discussing that next. It's Gene Ursula Show.
Welcome back to the Gene Ursula Show, Wednesday morning edition. We hope that you are going to have a nice, safe Thanksgiving holiday weekend. So how much would you or should you snoop on your teenager? And would you want your family car to help you keep an eye out on your kids? So the reason we ask this, G, is that many car makers are now including parental controls on new vehicles, and they would allow parents to see how safely their teens are driving. If this would have been available to you for baby G and Zion, would you have used it?
Nope.
Why?
I would not use it, but I have heard that there's something on that you're able to put on cars now for the insurance company. So for the information to go right to the insurance company, and it would help, you know, drive down the prices. Now, anytime I can get a good deal, I'm all for it. If it's not for a good deal, I don't believe in all of the tracking apps of knowing where your kids are and all those things. And here's why. I truly do believe in free agency of even children and kids. Now, don't get me wrong. If they're, you know, 5 years old, 10 years old, 11, you want to know where they are. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know. My kids didn't even have a cell phone at that time. But you want to know where they are in that situation. But I'm just saying, as they become teenagers, I always felt that giving them the free agency to decide and have a trust in what they are doing and not doing was all up to them, because you can lie. Like, kids, and by the way, parents, you want to talk about cell phone and technology? Guess what? Your kid's way ahead of you. Way ahead of you
when it
comes to technology. So you can put all the tracking devices on there all you want. In my opinion, that sets the child up to lie even faster. So I'm rather want to teach them free agency, consequences in that way. And Ursula, you've heard me talk to my kids before. I'm not exactly the easiest on my kids.
No, you're pretty tough, just given, you know, when I could hear you from down the hallway when you were talking to one of us, like, whoa. Okay, but so let me just explain how this would work, though, and then maybe you would change your mind. Because I could see, at least for one of my kids, it might have helped me, and I would say this maybe right as they turn 16 and they're new drivers, mm-hmm. you know, because you're supposed to have, you know, they're not supposed to have additional kids in there. I don't want, you know, it would be good to know if they are speeding or doing crazy things. So in 2016, General Motors started incorporating a system that you can basically get a digital report card at the mm-hmm. end of each of your drives. Okay. So this report card would include maximum speed, distance driven, mm-hmm. number of speed warnings that were issued, wide open throttle events, forward collision alerts, forward automatic braking occurrences, and traction control applications. And even as much as you could set a maximum volume on the stereo, my kid would not like that, or disable it entirely until seatbelts are fastened. So now, knowing that, does that change your mind at all? And again, think of when your kids were new drivers.
Mm-hmm. When they were new drivers, and right now, my Zion, he drives the same car. You get them a manual. You get them a manual because for some reason you have to behave automatically a lot better with a manual than with an automatic vehicle. Right. Your concentration is more and you're having to do. But still, all of those things that you just talked about, Ursula, if that helps drive the insurance down, because that insurance payment that we got to pay for these kids is just, I don't want to say it's criminal, but it's just not, it feels not fair. Right. It's like when you find it, like, wait a minute, is that for 6 months? No, sir. That is for every single month. Oh, my goodness. So if I can get that and it can help drive down the insurance price, I'm all for it.
But I'm going to challenge just the way you discuss. You said you believe in free agency, but we have also talked about, you know, you believe in free agency, but let's just say our kids in college. I mean, we've talked about how brains are not fully developed. When you're in college, you're going to do things even though you shouldn't be doing things. A car is a big responsibility. And if I could have some information, because I don't know what's happening when they're away from me. I can, you know, when they're driving with me, I would absolutely know, and I could give them, you know, advice as it was happening. But we don't know what happens when we're not there. So if you could look at it as not a punitive thing, but actually an instructive thing, and say, hey, it looks like, you know, some of these things are happening, or, you know, if you don't wear your seatbelt, your car ain't going to move. And these can establish good habits early on.
What about using it as an incentive rather than a way to punish your kids? So, you know, if you can improve your driving habits, or if you can actually show me that you can go a full week without doing something unsafe, you know, you gain these privileges, or, you know, I'm going to turn the report card off. What about using it as a positive incentive?
Well, there you go. So instructive or a positive incentive. Absolutely. And for me, if I can get a big insurance discount, because one of these apps would help monitor the driving and help give that kind of feedback? Heck yeah.
Well,
it's a privilege. I mean, it is a privilege to drive at that age.
You know how, you know, I remember the cars came out in the 90s, right? Like Nissan Maximas and then the automatic seatbelt deal that just kind of comes on. And then you ever see people all automatically like sit in front of the seatbelt because, look, they don't want to wear the seatbelt. That's kind of how I feel about this. Like, people either want to wear it or they don't want to wear it. And if the kid, the car won't drive unless the seatbelt is fastened. Okay, the kid just grabs the seatbelt and puts it on and he sits behind it. But he or she sits behind it. But I just would hope that, again, kids learn to do things. And I do like the incentive. I do like the incentive base. Maybe they can get an allowance from doing well after a monthly report. I think those are great. But I just want to leave on this last note. Shout out to the preacher's kids in the world, because I had some friends that were preacher's kids, and I got to tell you, they got in the most trouble out of anybody I've ever known in my life. They was always in the middle of something.
Okay, still ahead. We do need to talk.
We need to talk about leftovers. Yes, leftovers is going to be a big conversation on Friday. Do you eat leftovers or do you not? We weigh in on that next. Gene Ursula. Welcome back into the Gene Ursula Show. Yesterday, we found out that 88,000 Americans were hospitalized across the country due to COVID. Well, coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by the director of infectious diseases at Harborview in about 15 minutes, and we'll discuss what's going on right here in our home. But right now, Ursula, you have something to say.
I do, because I just wanted to point out, go to our Facebook page right now and check out yesterday's Agree to Disagree. We were talking about Arby's versus Chick-fil-A.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you to know that most people were agreeing with me.
Mm-hmm.
I even took a trip out to Arby's just to check out, just to make sure that I remembered it correctly.
Right.
Just for accuracy's sake.
Yeah, absolutely. But more than 200 people weighed in on that topic alone.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. And I learned a lot about our listeners. I got to tell you, I learned, to me, Arby's is the green bean casserole of fast food. Let's keep it a buck right now, okay? And secondly, I saw everybody was commenting, but it's interesting, right? Because Chick-fil-A did $11.3 billion in sales last year, as opposed to Arby's doing $3.89 billion in sales, and Chick-fil-A is open 52 days less than a year. So, okay. Our listeners love Arby's.
I'm just going to go with, this is what our listeners say.
Our listeners, hey,
but
they
anyway,
do.
Anyway, you can still weigh in. And if you missed our Agree to Disagree segment, you can always check out our podcast, too, and catch up, because we always have a ton of fun.
All right. We need to talk.
Yes.
And I've learned something. Are you a leftover snob? Yes, I'm talking to you that's listening. Are you a leftover snob? Are you someone that refuses to eat leftovers? Are you one of those that's like, nope, I got to have it that day and I can't have it the next? We need to find out and talk about who some of those folks are. Ursula, what's your take on leftovers, buddy?
There are very few leftovers that I enjoy. So I am one of those weird ones that I have to have food like hot. When mm-hmm. When it comes right out. So, I mean, I've been known to be that person who, and my kids just like really cringe when I do it, but I say it very nicely. But if it's kind of lukewarm when it gets to me, mm-hmm. even the first time around, I ask if, because I like it really warm. And then after it's in the fridge, I just feel like it somehow it loses its taste and I don't like it after that. But I know that like my sister who's listening right now, my sister, honey, mm-hmm. she leftovers are her thing. And somehow she can make leftovers. You know, there are people who can look at their leftovers and then make something amazing and it tastes delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I've already told you, I have some talents, but cooking is not one of them. So I don't have enough faith in my leftover abilities to enjoy leftovers. How about you?
Is honey the sister that took the family car?
Yes. Yeah, I told you about that.
Oh, I just want to know. I just want to know who we were talking about. Long live honey. Anyways, when it comes to leftovers, sign me up. Day one, day two, day three, and then on day four, smell check. You do that. Do a quick little smell check, make sure it's cool, and then if it's borderline, that's when you take the time to look behind you, to the left, to the right, make sure nobody else is looking, and then you eat it again. I'm eating leftovers every day of the week, and I'm appalled at anybody who is above leftovers.
Oh, it's not about being above. Don't get me wrong. And then my husband is so good. I mean, it's like something that I have a hard time getting over. There are also people who will, you know, if I have a little bit left over on my plate, whether it's my husband or my sister, same sister, she'll say, "Are you wasting all of that?" I mean, she will get my chicken bones and then she'll start gnawing the rest of the meat.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Are you disrespectful to chicken? Are you disrespectful?
I just can't get
are
you too close one of to
those? Are you one of those that leaves meat on the chicken? And
probably.
Then you have the audacity to keep grabbing other pieces. So you've taken four pieces of chicken.
No.
And you didn't
no,
eat all
you
the
added
meat on
to
the
that
bone?
Story. I don't just keep taking more. I'll just take my one and then I will eat and not get too. I don't want that gristle or whatever that is. I just.
That's the best. I eat it all. I eat
Ursula.
It.
Yes.
You're like that finicky cat that will like sniff at their food and then give you that look. Like, I ain't eating that. But you see, every house needs a dog in it. A dog is a garbage compactor, a garbage disposal that will just get rid of anything.
Yeah, I have
your
Scooter.
Husband who eats the leftover food off your plate. Me, I eat all of my son's leftover. You have to have someone who disposes of all the leftovers in the house.
Yes, so we're a good balance in my house. We don't waste. I'm just not the one that's going to be doing the leftovers. So,
so when I make my macaroni and cheese, right, I make it the day before because there's some meals that are actually better the next day. Macaroni, spaghetti, those things. So I like them the day before because then when those seasonings sop up in your noodles. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, that is where I will make an exception. Macaroni cheese, a couple of days, I'm good. I'll keep going.
I'm
not
cold.
That finicky of a, as much as I just described myself, I am not that finicky of an eater. I mean, I don't like, yes, I will eat just about anything. I just.
Can we get honey on the show to to validate that?
Yes.
Oh, no.
She's chuckling. But anyway, so what about our Thanksgiving? So what are you guys going to do with your leftover Thanksgiving?
Eat it all.
Turkey soup, man. Turkey soup, stock with the bones, throw that in the freezer. It's the best.
Not
by the way, Ursula?
Yeah?
You ever say, hey, what's that smell when you hear someone smell someone heating up the food in the microwave at work? I've heard it a couple times. Leftovers.
So leftovers. True.
Hey, coming up next, we have a doctor from Harborview joining the show. It's Gene Ursula.